Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beuschel Jr., and today I'm joined with my friend Stan Casaccio, since this is Joanne's week off. And we have a great show lined up for you. We have five great guests. First, as we do every week, we're going to be talking to State Senator Douglas Mastriano, who's going to give us a little bit of look behind the curtain in Harrisburg. And then joining us, we have, let me see if I get this right, Mike Ruggieri. Am I saying that right, Mike?
That's right, Don.
Okay. Mike Ruggieri, who is running for Commonwealth Court in Delaware County, correct?
Well, that would be the Common Pleas Court.
Common Pleas Court.
Trial level court.
Right, in Delaware County. And Deborah Tursillo, she'll be coming in shortly. And then from my home township of Middletown Township, I have, running for supervisor, I have Andy Warren and Dana Kane. So I want to thank everybody for coming in today, and we're going to start out with Senator Mastriano. And Senator Mastriano, welcome.
Thank you, Don. Stan, what's going on?
All hell's breaking loose every day. Are we ready to pay reparations to people that come here illegally? I'm trying to figure that out this morning. I've opened a new Christmas account. It's called the Illegal Alien Reparation Fund account.
And meanwhile, we have 400,000 veterans homeless in this country sleeping on streets.
Yeah, so, you know, sometimes I wonder where the priorities of the Biden administration is, but I really can't say. So, first of all, because this, of course, if you listen to this show, this announcement came as no surprise to everybody that your buddy, Jake the State Corman, has decided he's going to run for governor. Which kind of puts it a little bit into the light of, let's just say, why he submarined you in the audit the vote. Let's be gentle.
Well, I mean, you called it. Your political instincts were dead on. You were a couple months ahead of all this whole thing here, and it was odd that he did sabotage. You know, he's been dragging his feet for 11 months, and then he got pushed into the corner and was behind it, and then suddenly I noticed his support was fading and waning, and then he became adversarial to the whole thing. And so when this was co-opted, I don't think it was a big shock to most people that really Jake had an ulterior motive. So the game is, politically, so he wants to be the next governor. And auditing the vote is a winning issue. Let's do it, but he's not going to do it. It's going to be a half-hearted thing. He'll probably lose in court, so he could, you know, Jake can blame the courts. Those liberal courts got us again. We tried. But how do you establish voting integrity when you have these games going on behind the scenes?
It's obviously this is the games that the establishment, the old guard establishment Republican Party plays. And this is how Corman and the rest of these old-time establishment Republicans misread the room. He makes a big deal that he went down to Washington, D.C., went to the Capitol Hill Club, and I must admit I've had dinner there as well, but he went down to the Capitol Hill Club to meet with the congressional delegation from Pennsylvania. Now, he didn't say who he met with, you know, but he said he went down there and met with them all. And that's supposed to endear him to the conservative grassroots community of Pennsylvania. I mean, you know, that's the thinking.
I think he met with Josh Shapiro when he was down there.
More than likely. So obviously, he just does not get the fact that, A, he has cut his own throat politically by doing what he did to you. The constituents of Pennsylvania, the people of Pennsylvania, are not blind. So let's recap a little bit. I mean, we know what he did to you is from the audit, but so where are we at on this supposed audit that Mr. Corman is pushing forward?
I mean, it's in court, and I guess there'll be a hearing, something of that ilk, in December. So it's all about slow walking it. You know, we're going into now 2.5 months since this was removed from my hands by Jake. So there is no serious intention to get it done because it's the 16 items subpoenaed. Not one of them is a ballot. How do you audit the vote if you don't have the ballot? I mean, this doesn't even make sense. But I remind people that Jake Corman, you know, managed it during a session week to go to Washington, D.C. to woo the congressional delegation. But the same token, he was unable to go to Arizona.
Right.
To see the forensic investigation there. He was too busy to go to the White House in December to see Donald Trump. He was too busy to come to the Gettysburg hearing on November 25th. But when it's about himself, self-promotion, and his self-advancement, he's got plenty of time to do that.
And that's the crime of this all.
Senator, I have a question for you, and it really has to do with the questions I'm getting, and that's about redistricting and how that is playing out coming up in this next year, because we will be having new lines drawn. Can you give us some insight on that, and what are the pitfalls that we have to face, and how can we make sure that our Republican in name only people kind of listen to common sense?
Well, sadly, you know, Republicans, we have power and authority to do things, but we always hand it off. So they for the state district lines, the new state Senate seats, you know, state, you know, like me, and for the new representative seats, there's a committee that was formed to do this. I mean, why do we even bother having majority if we're not going to use our constitutional powers? As far as the other map, I haven't seen it for the congressional districts, but we're running out of time to actually vote on it. And we have, I think the House has 3 more weeks in session this year, physically in session, and I think the Senate has 2 weeks in session. So if we're going to roll, we're going to have to roll quick. It's going to be challenging court probably by the League of Women Voters again, as it always is, and we'll probably have another map handed to us from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
You know, one of the things that I found interesting with this whole Jake Corman thing, and this goes along with our good buddy from Montgomery County also, is you have not yet declared you're running for governor, and yet they seem fit to attack you. And Corman did it the sleazy, old-fashioned way that the establishment does it. And, of course, our buddy from Montgomery County, who I refuse to give any oxygen to, that's why I don't say his name, he's been on you from day one. So it's obvious to me, and I know Stan agrees with me
wholeheartedly,
that
he who shall not be named.
Yeah, that you are the
nameless one.
Yeah.
The nameless one. Yeah.
That you are the perceived threat from the conservative side of the aisle.
Well, it's interesting. You know, as you rightly said, Don, I'm not even in this race yet. And one guy, you know, obviously obsesses over me, which is interesting. The Democrats as well, you know, they constantly attack and spread all kinds of lies. And so that's why I wonder that young buckaroo, if you know, really politically he leans left, because if you use leftist tactics, I tend to think you lean that way. I don't know.
Well, Senator, I just want to say that person that we're not naming has never run an ad against a Democrat. Did you know that? He's always run it against Republicans.
He's never defeated a Republican in any kind of an election.
He's never defeated a Democrat in any kind of election.
Yeah, he's always run against Republicans.
And I'll give you one other thing. It's the highest paycheck he ever got in his life. So he needs the job.
That is scary. So the guy wants to go from mommy's basement to the governor's mansion. I don't think, anyway.
Literally, you're not kidding about that.
So, you know, one thing, so there's like 14 people that are in the race or about to be in it on the Republican side, one on the Democrat side. The Democrats, they cleared the field for themselves. Hats off to them. On the Republican side, how do you choose? There's a vast swath of people. So obviously you look at people that are qualified, that have demonstrated leadership, and that have been physically in this fight for the state to reopen it and fighting for you. And so those are the three measures I think you look at.
You know, one of the things, I'm not so opposed to the number of people that we have on our plate, because that's generally so. I hate those smoke-filled back rooms, but it also gives our people an opportunity to go out there and make the sale, to give the talking points, to talk about who they are and what they stand for, and then demonstrate what they stand for. So it gives people an opportunity to do that, and I think it just bolsters the Republican Party as a whole. Look, we had, 16 people, 17 people running for president?
Exactly. 17.
And,
17, yeah.
Yeah, And so I don't think it does us harm. I think it's one of those things that we could say, well, they owed it to Josh because it's a closed society. It's a one-party rule society over there in the Democratic Party. And there's no way Josh is going to go against the craziness of the Democratic leftist party at this point.
So
you know,
go ahead, Senator.
Yeah. So the article in the caucus that Brad Bumstead put together, you know, he's a good gumshoe reporter. He does good, decent work. He quoted from some of the sources of what Jake said, and basically Jake's argument is very rhino-ish. It's very establishment. I can raise money and I will clear the field. So his way of clearing the field started in the Senate, and that was, of course, to strip away the audit from Mastriano. And then the second way of clearing the field was taking away Senator Laughlin's, you know, main issue, recreational use of marijuana. Wherever you stand on, doesn't matter. He's advocating for that, and that issue was stripped away from Dan Laughlin, and he probably could easily raise $1 million on his gubernatorial run for that.
Right.
And so that's the way these old politicians play that game to clear the field.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, and again, what bothers me is that they don't see the writing on the wall. They're using the ability to raise money as the barometer of whether a candidate is viable to win an election or not. Now, and I bring it up, and I sometimes I sound like a broken record, but Stacey Garrity proved that narrative to be incorrect and false. Okay, she never ran away from President Trump. In fact, she campaigned with President Trump. She was outspent. I think Torricella raised $1.6 million and Stacey raised a grand total of $260,000. And yet she she won the election. So this narrative that you have to A, raise a lot of money, B, that a conservative cannot win a statewide race in Pennsylvania, and you have to kiss the butt of the establishment to win is totally false. We've proven
and
that.
You know firsthand that the establishment told her to basically, you ain't going to win this.
Yes, not that I'm going to name names because I won't, but there is a well-known donor to the Republican Party who she went to get a check from. He wrote her a check for $5,000, and that to you, that $5,000 to him is like 25 cents to you and I. But then on top of that, when he hands her the check, he says, I don't know why I'm giving you this check because it's a waste of money. But then after she wins, he calls her up and says, well, you know, I was in your corner 100% and I support you and all that, you know. So this is the stuff we deal with. So should you decide to get into this race, what are you going to bring to the people of Pennsylvania?
Well, leadership first off, and it's just not talk, you know. And you guys know. So you go to these dinners, and I've been to some of them. I'm listening to some of the candidates talk. I will fight for you. I will do this, that, and the other thing. And I just sit there and I think, where the heck have you been the past year and a half? It's been I haven't been alone, but it's been lonely. Very few people willing to stick their necks out there. And you know, they were nowhere to help open the state. They were nowhere when Levine was you know, with this deadly policy of sending the sick back into the homes that resulted in 16,000 deaths. They were nowhere to be seen during the mask fight. I mean, they're absent. They're gone. So what do we bring? Demonstrated leadership. I've been out there from the beginning. It's just not all talk for me. Somebody who actually knows how this works. So we have one candidate, a declared candidate for governor. He's out there talking about, I will slash the legislative body. I will reduce the size. It's like, dude, read the Constitution. The governor can't do that. It's separation of powers. I mean, so we have people just saying crap, hoping that it'll affect people's vote. And it's not even possible.
Senator, if I can jump in here, there's something else that's more on a subjective type of basis. First off, as far as money goes, actually, I think that's a negative when they talking about raising all these millions of dollars, because you want to know where the heck all that money's coming from and who do you now owe to pay back for the money when they come saying, hey, could you do this for me? Could you do that for me? Joe Biden is the perfect example of that, and we don't need anything else. But here's something else that you offer, and there's a couple other candidates who are in the same category, not necessarily for governor, for other offices. And that is, in your career in the military, you put your life on the line for this country. You led men. When you had a platoon, you know the guys that were going to produce. That happens. As a battery sergeant, I was able to tell when a guy was just going to do things half, you know what. and the guys that were really going to jump in. So you knew that. You were also in the intelligence area. So you knew how important getting proper information to make good common sense judgments. You're not driven by the political hot buttons out there. When I see you and your decisions that you've made, and I've been following you now for over 2 years, and I'm not going to remind you who I said something about 2 years ago, but I'm not going to remind you of that. But clearly, you have been in there for all the right reasons. We need more people being in service for the right reason. And if you remember, when we last Thursday, when we met and Steve Bannon was speaking, he told the story about Alonzo Cushing. And I wish people would read that story. And we and you and some of these other people are on Missionary Ridge giving the last measure for the country you believe in. And that's something that you have that nobody else has that's running. They're all me type of people. You've always been you. How can I help you?
Thank you.
Well,
I'm blessed. It's all about service. And that's one thing, of course, that you just delineated. You know, anyone that wore the uniform knows about, you know, service above self kind of thing. That's actually part of our core values in the Army. But I just stop listening to words out there. I have folks on the radio, watch the works of the hands, because there'll be fair speeches, there'll be flashy ads, there'll be, you know, perfect hair. But just, and obviously I'm jealous of anyone with full-size hair.
That also leaves me out.
Well, you know, as long as we keep the shine off, we'll be all okay there.
Wait a minute, so, we got a judge here, a judge candidate. We better not. He's looking arrows at you now too.
But
I'm,
you know,
the same boat. I'm still in that regard.
So the nice thing is, and I tell people this all the time, is when you have the ability to approach things from a standpoint of what is best for the people, not necessarily what is best for you or any kind of a political ambition. So you've been, and again, you know, since last March, you've been steadfastly on this show every week, except if you were in session or doing something for the people of Pennsylvania, like when you were out in Harris or in Arizona. But you were the only one in the beginning that stood up. You were the only one that defended the people of Pennsylvania. How many days was it that you knocked on Wolf's door when we were doing the Where's Wolfie segment? Was
55,
it
55?
Yes. Okay. But he did come back with a nice tan from Florida. His head was sunburned, so we knew where he was.
That hurt. That was awful.
Yeah, but you know, I remember being in Harrisburg when this emergency decision was made that he took over power, and I remember you standing on the steps with literally thousands of people there, and I said, this guy is a leader.
Yep.
And you took it upon yourself. I mean, there was no benefit for you other than for you taking a stand. I saw, other than you were going to get shots left and right from everybody else. So I acknowledge you for that. And I remember that very well.
Yep. I sum up Senator Mastriano in three simple words: honor, integrity, and leadership. Senator Mastriano, thank you for being here this week.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, gentlemen. God bless.
Take care now.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to get into our judicial candidates from Delaware County and our supervisor candidates from Middletown Township. I'm Don Beuschel, Jr., and this is The Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM.
Hi, this is Don from The Conservative Voice. Have your rugs and floors taken a beating this winter? Fido's sharing the great outdoors with your sofa and chairs? Puppy still potty training? I have the solution to your problem. Give Fresh and Clean Cleaning Services a call at 215-949-0682. Fresh and Clean Cleaning Services, located in Levittown, Pennsylvania, can handle all your rug, floor, and furniture cleaning needs. Serving parts of Bucks and Montgomery counties, along with Northeast Philadelphia and parts of New Jersey, the owner Rick takes great pride in treating your home as his own. Fresh and Clean Cleaning Services provides services to both residential and business clients. So if it's time to remove those nasty spots, stains, and smells from your floors and furniture, give Rick at Fresh and Clean a call at 215-949-0682. You will be glad you did.
Put your name at the top of his list and a statue.
And welcome back to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. So,
Don, I want to just acknowledge our great producer and director and everything. I came in, I didn't recognize who the heck they were. They had, you know, Halloween stuff on. Somebody has an eagle head on. And I'm figuring, what the heck's going on?
I said he was an eagle too, but he told me he was a pigeon.
A pigeon?
Which is the state, which is the city bird of Philadelphia. So that kind of works out pretty well. So, so I want to welcome our two judicial candidates from Delaware County, Mike Ruggieri, correct, Mike? And Deborah Trussello. Thanks, guys.
Hello.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's get right down to it. So one of the things that we're hearing a lot about is judicial philosophy. And what one of the things that we talk about is activist judges but versus judges that actually follow the laws written by the Constitution. And we've seen that play out in this last election. And we've seen Judge Brobson get overturned by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court when he legally refused to accept 2,300 ballots that were not in conjunction with the law as written, Act 77 as written. But the state Supreme Court overturned him. So I'm going to ask you both, and I will start with Debbie first. So what do you guys think about that, activist judges versus judging, you know, by the law?
With the authority that a judge has, especially, you know, Court of Common Pleas, Commonwealth Court, Superior Court, Supreme Court, it's so important to apply the law that we have and not legislate from the bench. With that authority that you have, you're compromising predictability of the law. That's what you're compromising when you legislate from the bench.
Right.
You're not taking, and then it also is your own personal opinion getting in there. It's a political opinion. Judges are supposed to be neutral, and we have to maintain that.
Right.
If we don't maintain that, we lose the law. The law is not being applied. You're opening up the bench to unpredictability and politics. You know, that's the one sacred place that we have to leave politics out of.
Okay, so Mike, now, so let's play the other role here, okay? And you come back at me. So I'm one of these guys that's going to say, hey, I'm looking at the law, but this is the intent. I don't care what it says. This was the intent. You know, so if it was written 50 years ago, well, things have changed now. So we have to adjust that law. But as a judicial guy, as a judge, your responsibility is
to follow the law as it's written, Don. And for a trial judge, I guess maybe it's a little simpler. You have to follow precedent of the upper courts, the appellate courts. When you become a judge, you swear to uphold the law and the Constitution of the U.S. and the state of Pennsylvania. You don't get to put your personal opinions in there if you disagree. If you think a law maybe isn't meeting the needs of the people as it was maybe when it was written, you could suggest somewhere in your opinion, in a footnote perhaps, that maybe it needs revisiting by the legislature, but you cannot change the law. And it's pretty simple for trial court judges, which is what Deb and I are running for. Follow the law as it's written. Only if there's, and here's another thing, when they pass laws in the legislature, they have what's called a legislative history where there's debate on the floor and they talk about why they're passing that particular law and the reasons behind it. So you, as a judge, can often go to that material to try to discern what the intent of the legislature was. But in the end, we follow the law as it's written.
Now, let's bring in one of the things we were talking about, and we're going to go around the table. We'll bring Andy Warren in on this, and we'll bring Dana Kane in on this. One of the things, Mike, we were talking about before the show started was the experience that you and Deb were bring to the campaign versus the experience of your opponents. So,
correct.
What do you guys bring that you can offer to the people of Delaware County?
Well, experience is, to me, a very key factor in this race. Deb and I have both been trial attorneys, litigators, for over 30 years in the courts. Me personally, I've tried over 100 jury trials. I've tried over 500 cases in other forums, whether it was a bench trial, an arbitration type proceeding, but it's a trial. And many of those trials involved discrimination in work. I've represented longtime employees who were mistreated or discriminated by their employers, whether it was on the basis of age, sex, or race. And I've gone to court and won those cases. I've tried eminent domain cases where you're probably familiar with that law where the state or government can take property mm-hmm. for a public use, but they are required to pay fair share, fair compensation. Many times they don't offer that, and you have to go to court to get that. I've tried breach of contract cases, cases involving injuries to people who were hurt by the negligence of others, and their lives were turned upside down. So I've tried family law cases, criminal cases. And this is the trial court. That's what you have in trial court. So that's my experience, and Deb shares a lot of that as well. When you talk about our opponents, they've never tried a jury case, and yet this is the court where jury trials are held. So they would be presiding over something they've never done.
So Deb, obviously you have the similar experiences that Mike has. And he touched on this, so let's expand on this a little bit. Your opponents, on the other hand, have never even tried a trial case at all?
Right. Neither one of our opponents have tried a case in court, so, doing a trial. And on-the-job training is not the place to get it when you're a court of common pleas judge and people are bringing their serious matters before you, looking to have their day in court and... you're doing on-the-job training. You need seasoned trial attorneys to take these jobs. And not only are we seasoned trial attorneys, I also am a trial attorney with family law, divorce, custody support, personal injury, workers' comp. Mike and I are trying cases all the time. We also have judicial experience. Mike has been an arbitrator, making decisions at the arbitration level, and I've been a magistrate. And as far as our opponents go, one of them is a magistrate, but she might spend maybe 6 hours on the bench a week. And of course, during COVID, it was a lot less than that. Whereas I had 7 secretaries, and that translates to 1,200 to 1,500 cases per secretary. So I was rolling 7,000 to 10,000 cases a year, where my opponent might have maybe 3,000 a year. And I was making that distinction between her and I because I had one of the busiest jurisdictions in Delaware County and maybe even across the board in the state, because I had the airport, Tinicum, Fallcroft. I had the local police. I had the state police. I had customs. I had all sorts of experience as far as a magistrate goes that, concentrated, condensed. And I've been an arbitration panel member too. But our opponents tend to exaggerate their experience and qualifications. I've spent 32 years week in and week out at the Delaware County Courthouse and surrounding courthouses. Mike and I are both licensed in the state of Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and we've been doing litigating in both states, whereas our opponents, I don't think they have much of a practice. Mike and I are... working so many hours keeping up with our practices as well as running this campaign. You walk into our offices and we have loads of files and case law, and we have clients calling us all the time, and our opponents just aren't at that level.
One thing I've noticed is if you take Krasner in Philadelphia as an example, he's been hiring DAs not so much on their experience like you're talking about, Debbie. He hires them on their ideology, what's their philosophy. And this is the difference between you and the Democratic Party today. The Democratic Party is not the party of Jack Kennedy or Scoop Jackson or any of those guys, for sure. They're all driven by ideology, and that's what they want to force on us, either judiciary in legislation or in the judiciary in your area. One thing about both of you is the ability to attack problems from a common sense way, understanding the law, and that's why you win cases, because you go right by the numbers, and there's no ideology here. You're either right or wrong. One of the questions I have for both of you, and that is, for me, taking you through a case, if you're sitting on the bench and you're listening to the lawyers presenting their case, and a lawyer is giving you this crazy scenario, do you stop and say, wait a minute, I got to understand exactly what you're talking, you know, where is your evidence? Would you do something like that, or how would you approach that? Because I know it's kind of, you can't really entice somebody to make, you can't help your the attorney make his case, but I've listened in on a few, and I'm going, how the heck is that attorney even bringing this up? It makes no sense.
Well, Stan, I can bring up a little scenario that I was involved in one time in a trial, and we were talking with the judge prior to going out in front of the jury, and as you often do before the trial starts, and the opposing attorney was advancing some things along the lines you're talking about and finished up with, you know, it's a very complicated case, Judge. And the judge said to him, well, if it's complicated to you and me, how do you think the jury's going to understand it? And what the point is you need to simplify things, and I think Deb talked about predictability. The law's out there, and for the most part, it's clearly written, unambiguous, and you can follow it. And if an attorney or a litigant in a particular case is presenting something that doesn't, you know, match up or supported by the law, it's our job to, you know, we can't find in their favor. And I mean, when you talk about shutting them down, or so, I always try to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and to present their case as fully as they possibly can. That's what a judge should do. That's what an arbitrator should do. And I've arbitrated hundreds of cases, made decisions in those things. But in, you know, at the end of the day, you need to follow the law,
right?
And your decisions have to be based on the law and the facts.
Well, you have to keep them in their lane. In other words, you have to keep them in the lane of where the law is. You can't let them veer out of that, away from the law, and start putting their spin on the law, what they think the law should be, because that's where you guys have to clamp down a little bit on.
Pretty
that.
Much. I yeah. mean, lawyers, you know, we're paid to argue.
Right.
And if there's any way that maybe you can interpret a law that is more favorable to your position, then, you know, you got to have some leeway to let the lawyer make that argument. But sure, we need to recognize when it's totally off the wall.
you know, what the word predictability is so important. It's important in my field, which is business and economics. If we don't have predictability of what's going to happen to interest rates, inflation, and all that stuff, you know, we become very restrictive. And that's what you're seeing right now. We're seeing the Jimmy Carter era being revisited in steroids.
Oh, God,
but,
yes.
But the predictability in the courtroom is even more important, because without people saying, wait a minute, what's going on here? Yesterday you said this, now you're saying that. There's no predictability. You can go in and steal all this stuff from a drugstore and no one chases you, and that's okay. You can steal $1,000 worth of stuff. These are the predictability things
right.
that are not happening today because of ideologically driven people that sit on the bench. And that's the one thing, you guys are not ideologically driven.
That's
you're law driven.
That's absolutely correct. Yep.
Exactly that. You have laws and they make the statement of the law. Then you have your elements under the law. And then you have evidence that you want to present, witnesses. And predictability in that, okay, this case is about this law, and so this is what the case is going to be about. When you interject politics or anything like that, you're totally stepping away from the elements of the cause of action. And
great
you're,
point.
You're, it's now, what is it?
Right.
Is well, is it the law that we're dealing with?
See, people out there, she's really good. Vote for her, please.
So there's a fine line, though. So going back to your scenario, I experienced as a magistrate and as an arbitration panel member, there's a fine line between when an attorney comes up and starts doing their case and presenting different scenarios and maybe spinning off course, versus the opposing counsel objecting, mm-hmm. and saying, hey, objection, this is irrelevant, or this, you know, is not on point to this case, making some sort of objection, because as a judge, you have to be neutral. And you said it, the judge should not be trying the case.
Right.
So, however, if opposing counsel isn't objecting and you have a jury absorbing what's being said and you have an attorney kind of spinning off, you give them so much leeway and then you might want to sidebar that. Because
so what you're saying is,
so what you're saying is,
if something really comes up and it's questionable, you're gonna say, "Hold on, we're gonna take a 5-minute break in my in my chambers. I gotta ask you a couple questions."
You guys are basically gonna put the train back on the track, so to speak.
Exactly.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example, Don. Let me just say one thing: the perfect example of what we're talking about, ideology, is Josh Shapiro, who's now running for governor, never tried a case, and was our attorney general for the state of Pennsylvania. He goes after the Sisters of the Poor, not because there was a basis to do that, because they were proven in, they won their case. He went back after them based on ideology. And I don't want that person sitting on a bench. I don't want that person as my governor. I want somebody that's going to protect the people and listen, follow the law when it's there. And
absolutely,
that's why it's
correct.
Important.
That's our job, really.
So let's bring so Dana, you and Andy are running for supervisor in Middletown Township. So one of the things we're talking about here is experience and qualifications. Now, you've been on the show before, but why don't you go ahead and tell everybody, first of all, your qualifications and your background, and then, you know, what you're going to bring to Middletown Township, because I know Andy's qualifications backwards and forwards.
yeah, most people do. So really, it comes down to, you know, I have a dual degree from Drexel University, mathematics and economics. Those two things are key for what the board does. The board is in charge of a lot of what they do, is in charge of planning, development, zoning, and finances. So levying taxes and setting a budget. All of those things go hand in hand with my experience. I've been working for over 15 years now as an actuary, specializing in financial planning, budgeting, forecasting, and that forecasting piece is the biggest thing that I hope that I can bring. A lot of the decisions, especially the ones that are going to be coming down the pike in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years, are going to be long-term decisions. We're talking about development at the mall, development on Woodburn Road. So it's things that are going to impact our township for years to come.
Building more big M's.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
So our current board, and I live in Middletown Township, so I'm going to throw my own thing in here. So our current board, I believe, is 5-0 Democrats, if I'm not mistaken. So obviously you and Andy would be the voice of reason on this board, because I've seen some of the decisions that this board has made. So I'm glad to see that you have a background in economics and mathematics, because I think it's very important that is something that we are sorely lacking on the current board.
What are you talking about? The Democrats practice new math.
Yeah,
it's
know.
Anything they want it to mean.
So
in a way, and given all of the stress that a lot of our businesses in Middletown have gone through over the past 2 years with COVID, they're going to need someone that has their back, that understands the economy and understands what they need in order to get back on their feet.
Oh, and it's evident as you drive around Middletown Township and other areas of Levittown, of all the small businesses that are closed, those shops, you know, in some of these strip malls are empty and things of that nature. I mean, the Oxford Valley Mall is almost a ghost town at this point.
Right. It's not even the small strip town. It's the big mall, like Oxford Valley Mall is a ghost town. Sometimes.
And Andy will tell you this, the implications of that, Dana, is the fact that those were the cornerstone of raising a lot of real estate taxes for the schools and for the township, and now that's going away. So guess what? When they go in to appeal their case and they bring the appraisers, the value is going to be half of what it was before. So guess what? Guess who's paying the bill particular point?
Let me bring Andy into this, because I'm sure he's familiar with this. So one of the things that I always found interesting is how the current board is willing to kiss the butt of Sesame Place to give them tax breaks. elaborate on that a little bit for me, because you're a guy that knows about the budgets and the numbers and things of that nature.
Look, let me get back to that Sesame Place thing in just 1 minute.
Right.
But let me follow up on what the judge candidates and what Dana had said. And I'm asking your listeners to pay attention to what I'm going to say now. As much as we're in this business, there's nothing new as far as issues, and there's nothing new as far as uniqueness to what's going on. For example, when I was a supervisor in Warminster in the 1970s, one of the major issues was the problems between the board of supervisors and the police chief. And today in Middletown, one of the problems is the problems between the board of supervisors and the fire people's association volunteers. When I was a county commissioner in the 1980s, one of the major issues that we fought for was to keep Bucks County whole during the redistricting process, which you and the senator were talking about. We're right back there again. And with Dana, we'll be voicing the same thing. We've got to keep that issue whole for Bucks County. We worked with, it's important that you have that cross line experience. We're running in Middletown, but I've worked with Commissioner Artisi and people, Senator Loper from Delaware County, since we're here, and we need, government is not an island unto itself.
Right.
You're talking about traffic. When I was at PennDOT, oversaw traffic in all of Bucks County, including in Pennsbury Township when we widened Route 1. But the fact of the matter is that there's nothing a better teacher than experience. I am half of the ticket that is running for supervisor in Middletown this year that has the experience that we can go in. You know, there are people who run for local office, and I've run against them, who have never, ever attended one local meeting, let alone tried a case, before they run for office. Oh, I'm going to run for county commissioner. I'm going to run for whatever. And they've never been there. One of our candidates, I think, fits that category. But the long and the short of it is, these issues, the names change, the impact is the same, and I am asking your listeners in Bucks County, in Middletown specifically, to vote for Dana and I to speak to the issues that are prevalent to us that impact our neighbors. Sesame Place is the second largest producer of taxes in the township. I think the hospital's the first. But again, you're talking right in the smack place where this present board allowed 500, 600
that's what I'm that's why I brought it
coming
up.
Coming into the Oxford Valley Mall, and they're all going to the same road. That kind of thinking is ludicrous. We've got to have people, as Dana said, who look beyond the end of their nose when dealing with issues in local government, because it affects our township, but it affects our neighbors equally.
And see, that's why I brought up the Sesame Place. And again, I prefaced it with the tax revenue thing, but part of that issue is the traffic situation up there. Because if you're familiar with the area at all, when Sesame Place is open, the traffic is nuts anyway. Now you're going to put in 500, 600, whatever the number ends up being, of adult community homes. You know, that's even going to be even worse. So
yeah, and that has even more implications, right? Because we know apartments are not going to bring in the same amount of tax revenue for schools.
Yes.
So that pushes, you know, even more on all of our taxes. So it's got ramifications that are beyond traffic, that are beyond, you know, just more people.
Now, wait a minute, Dana. The president says we should all be paying our fair share.
Yeah, he wants to take my fair share and give it to somebody who just crossed the Rio Grande.
Yeah. I want to scale back.
Scale back.
Build back better.
Build back better. I don't know what he's talking about. Build back better. He's talking about build back to Jimmy Carter era.
Andy, you brought up experience. Now, so one of the things that I know you have done is you've been attending these supervisor meetings. You've been attending commissioner meetings. You're very familiar with budgetary issues, tax base, and all that, things like that. If we continue on the path, and let's just take the Bucks County commissioners out of the equation. This is about Middletown because that's where you're at. If we continue on the path of the current board, what are we looking at future-wise as far as our taxes, our budget, traffic?
Right now there's 45,000 people who live in Middletown Township. The fact of the matter is that you start increasing new dwellings by hundreds at a crack, you're going to impact the roads and all. Similarly, you can't be looking at issues just as they are today, because every act you take today, that zoning that they changed for Oxford Valley Mall, that's all well and good. We were just talking about putting apartments at Oxford Valley Mall. No, you weren't, because he's got a strip mall down the road. She's got a strip mall 2 miles away, and they had the same zoning. And now that the board has changed that, they're going to say, hey, I want apartments where I am. I want apartments here. These are the issues that very often people miss. And, you know, let me follow on your point because it's really good, as many of your points are. The other night there was a budget hearing. We're putting a budget of a $20 million, $40 million budget together in Middletown. You know how many people attended the workshop out of 45,000? You know how many attended? Two. Me and Dana. And that's the issue that I find so confounding. But yet, if we're going to be talking about putting a 7-Eleven, which is important, at the end of your street, you'll have 20 or 30 people there, and then they'll be gone. But you talk about spending $40 million, nobody shows up because it's boring. That's why we must have people like your listeners that are here today in every town, county that they're in. They've got to take the day people like us stop paying attention to what's happening in our courts and in our local government. We leave it open to those who don't have our best interest at heart.
That's what the bureaucracy counts on, right, by the way. Bureaucracy counts on that.
They count on people not paying attention.
Don, can I follow up just for a second on what Andy said? Because the theme there is when he talks about showing up. This election, I've been a judge of elections for 15 years in Haverford Township, which is my hometown. And this election after the general presidential from 2020 is generally the least turnout of any election. And you might get 25% of the voters to come out. And I think what Andy's trying to say is we need to do better than that. People got to show up, get to the polls on Tuesday, and cast their votes. Because you know what they say, don't complain if you're not voting.
Well, exactly right. I say that to people all the time. You want to complain, that's fine. You have a right to complain. But if you don't want to go out and cast your vote, then don't complain.
A two-second follow-up on that. I think it's probably similar in Delaware County. I was at the commissioner's meeting last week. 60,000 Bucks Countyans applied for mail-in ballots. 20,000 of them, as of a week ago, had mailed them back. So that 20,000 people have already mailed their ballots. So the people who are sitting and who have not done that yet, it's imperative to follow up on the judge's point. Our democracy, this is not play game. This isn't something that happens every year or so. It's imperative because the decisions that are made by voters next Tuesday will impact what happens in their courts and in their townships for the next 2 years or more.
So here's
10
something.
Years
yes.
In Delco.
So here's something I think we can combine with, and we'll let Dana jump in on this too. One of the things that I find, and when I've attended these supervisor meetings and stuff like that, is they'll vote on stuff, but there's like hardly any discussion. And it's almost like they've had a private meeting and said, hey, this we're going to bring this up and we're going to vote on it. And I always find that as a conflict of the Sunshine Laws.
Isn't that amazing?
It's called a work
session.
It's
a real problem in Middletown these days.
So Dana, you jump in on this first, and I know the judges can't say anything specific about it, but I'm going to let them talk about Sunshine Laws and how they should be applied at the minimum.
Yeah, it's a real problem because when there's not that robust discussion, you're not getting the full view and you're not even thinking through the implications of your decisions because you don't have alternate viewpoints that are being heard. You know, we have it, you know, just a couple examples over the past couple of months is the people that are being appointed to the various boards in the township and the commission, the committees and commissions in the township. There's no discussion around, you know, who this person is, what their resume is, why they should fit this board. It's just a, we're putting this person up for a board. Yes, everyone votes for a yay.
So discussion happened ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's a problem because people should understand and there should be record of why these people are being put on these boards.
Especially when one of the people appointed.
Zoning, right.
Especially when one of the people appointed is the spouse of a member of the 5-member board who's going to get $1,000 a year for being on that board. And 2 weeks ago, the person who was appointed to the Planning Commission just happens to have the last name as the party chair, the Democrat party chairperson in Middletown Township.
One party rule equals corruption.
Yeah.
Yes.
Another great example is the Steyer situation. You know, you know, if you're not familiar with it, it's a
I am
a township, right? The township runs it. Previously, it was a 20-year lease. The farm was different than the storefront, and it was an agenda item for discussion, up for discussion, in I think the January meeting. Not only was there not robust discussion, but they decided on who was going to get that lease at that meeting with no public comment. It was just, you know, 5-0 for, you know, the one, right. You know, the person that had been having the farm, that had the farm. And that's a 20-year decision for our township because it is a 20-year lease. Public commentary, no agenda item on a vote. It was up for just discussion. It's just one of the examples of what's happening. You know, we're just being, you know, railroaded with an agenda of this current board.
And Dana, correct me if I'm wrong, and or Andy, who if you have knowledge, but if I remember correctly too, was not the store owner kind of blindsided by that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the person that had the 20-year lease had no clue what was happening.
The store owner was being told by customers, I hear you're going to be taken over at the end of the year. The owners who were operating the market were told by customers. They didn't know it until they checked with the township.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So, and again, it's more about that process, right? And how the board, you know, regardless of the decision that was made, it's the process of the board and it's that closed door type of governing that is a real problem. You know, it's a 20-year decision, and it's a place that, you know, I know I bring my kids, and I know that I've gone into that store, the deli, the desserts.
Right.
I utilize. I would have liked, as a member of the community, to have a say in what I want that.
Well, how about knowing it's just going to happen?
Right.
That would be nice.
Absolutely.
So, so before we run out of time, I want to bring the judicial candidates into this. Now, you don't have to get into specifics, but how do you guys approach a Sunshine Law situation? I mean, philosophically, how do you take? I don't care who wants to jump in on that.
I was a solicitor for a lot of years and had to deal with the Sunshine Law. But philosophically, the Sunshine Law is the Sunshine Law. Things are supposed to be done on the public floor. And the mentality in Delaware County, okay, because I've seen their literature, is, okay, the only thing we don't control here now is the courts, and we have to take over the courts because we have to push our political agenda. That's where they're at. They're not at fairness to the people. They're not at transparency. The Sunshine Act is transparency. That's what that is.
And Mike?
Yeah, that's the word I was going to use. The purpose of that law is to make things transparent so that the public can have confidence that the decisions being made by government bodies are fair and not based on special interests or some other kind of bias. And when you don't have that open dialogue and presentation, that's, people are left with the lack of confidence in how that was made, that decision.
And Andy, that's one of the things that you've talked about before. One of the things that you want to bring to the board and Dana as well is transparency
for another day, another day, another discussion. Part of the problem, too, is your compatriots. There's no reporters at the meetings these days that you go and then you can talk it on your show. You're few and far between. Yeah. We have a local show in Bucks County that she's there periodically. But the public media has fallen down, not nationally, locally, on the same thing.
Nationally, too.
And I would go, and again, I know this is just a Bucks County thing, but I would go into the fact that the Bucks County Courier Times, which used to be on top of these things, has been taken over by some Japanese conglomerate, I think it is, if I'm not mistaken. And they no longer are concerned with local issues. You have no local reporting anymore. This is what you're getting into now.
We have less transparency across the board in Philadelphia and surrounding counties. I'm just saying I hope that the voters get out there, and I know that Democrats agree, come out November 2nd and vote.
So, folks, look, it's important that, A, November 2nd, you get out there and you vote. Delaware County, Mike Ruggieri, Deborah Tosello, Bucks County, Andy Warren, Dana Kane, but more importantly, you have to get out there and vote.
Yes.
If you are one of these people that are saying, oh, my vote isn't going to count, so I'm going to stay home, you're playing into the hands of the Democrats. They are counting on you to be so mad that you're not going to come out and vote. You have to.
Yeah, and in a local election like what's going to happen in Middletown, it's a couple hundred votes that are going to make the decision. So it is not that much.
Not we're running out of time, but I'm going to say this
your
to everybody.
Your vote counts.
We the last election in the Bucks County Commissioners, Rob Alacrity lost by 900 votes. So 900 and something votes. There's 331 counties voting districts in Bucks County. That's three votes a district. We would not have a Democratic-controlled Bucks County Board of Supervisors if people would get out and vote. Please vote. We'll see you next week on The Conservative Voice. Stay tuned for the Don't Back Down show with Dan Casaccio and Vicki Lightcap. And I'll even maybe hang around for a little while. Take care, guys. See you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. The red, white, and blue.